Welcome. The Bundesliga title race is over, but leave it to the Ruhr Derby to get our German football motor running again. Schalke topped Dortmund for the first time in nearly 4 years. Are the tides in Germany's best rivalry finally changing? Bayern Munich have appointed Niko Kovac to take the helm next season, and boy, did that move ruffle some feathers. And the German Cup semifinals are on the horizon. We preview the two games and discuss the matchup we want to see in Berlin. This is Tribuna Weekly. Davis von Optorp here with Matt Ford, chopping at the bit to get this podcast started. Matt takes to the match day.
German Federal League Division 1, match day 30. Club for physical exercise, Wolfsburg Football, 0. Football Club Augsburg, 0. Club for agility games, Stuttgart, 1. Hanoverian Sport Club of 1896, 1. Gymnastics and Sports Society, 1899, Hoffenheim, 2. Hamburg Sport Club, 0. Bayer 04 Leverkusen Football, 4. Sports Community Frankfurt United, 1. Hertha Berlin Sport Club, 2. The First Football Club of Cologne, 1. Football Club Bavaria Munich, 5. Club for Physical Exercise Prussia Mönchengladbach, 1. Football Club Schalke 04, 2. Ball Games Club Sport Prussia 09 Dortmund, 0. Sport Club Werder Bremen, 1. Lawn Ball Sport Leipzig, 1.
So those results obviously missing the Sport Club Freiburg, Sport Club Freiburg against the First Football Club of Mainz 05. That game is happening on Monday, but there's too much that has happened this weekend, and we can't wait for another Monday night game, the last one, luckily, for the season. So let's get right into it. The Ruhr Derby was definitely more entertaining in every respect. Even when it was 0-0, I thought it was a really entertaining end-to-end game, that it was only a matter of time where one side was going to take the advantage. Both teams were putting the other team under pressure. And ultimately, Schalke won their first game since 2014. So, Matt, what did you think of the Ruhr Derby, and did it live up to your expectations?
I'm going to dispute your argument slightly a bit there. And I thought the first 50 minutes up until Schalke's goal, I don't think it was particularly entertaining. I thought it was intriguing. It wasn't uninteresting or boring. I thought it was interesting that Schalke was certainly on top, had the upper hand, and I thought it was clear during the first half that there was only one team there that actually had a plan. But as has so often been the case with Schalke in the second half of the season, especially at home with these series of 1-0 wins that they've had, or close wins that they've had, they do lack that little bit of quality up front. But I think we've said that all through the season, that, I mean, as great a job as Tedesco's doing, and we'll get onto that in a sec, if they are going to maintain this position that they've built for themselves at the top of 12, in the top two, top three of the league, and maintain a position in the Champions League as they expect themselves to be, they need more than Giga, than Borstaller, than Mbolo, than Konoplyanka up front. And they're doing a good job at the moment, but they're going to need more than that. And I thought that was the case in the first half. They just didn't have that final bar, that final pass to really get through. I think it was an effort from Schöpf that really tested Berkey. That was the first shot, which Berkey tipped around the post in the first half. But apart from that, there weren't really some brilliant chances. But that changed in the second half, and the goal was deserved when it came. Daniel Caligiuri playing a key role in it, which I thought was typical of the season he's had and that Schalke have had, and also a pretty good example of how Schalke played as a whole. High pressing, win the ball off a really lackluster and lacking ideas Dortmund, in this case captain Marcel Schmelzer, who was poor, and his comments after the game, you might as well put them on record and put them on repeat after every single game, criticising his own players, partly rightly, criticising himself, also correct. Roman Weidenfeld, the goalkeeper in the week, also coming out in a kicker interview, criticising his Dortmund teammates for lacking a sort of team collective will to win and being there for their own benefit, and only being in it for themselves. And that all showed in that Dortmund performance, especially in the second half. And Schalke fantastically took really good advantage of it.
Well, I mean, I think in the first half, there weren't that many chances, but it was interesting to see why there weren't very many chances. It wasn't too many wayward passes or individual errors,
well,
basically.
Not from Schalke, but there certainly were from Dortmund.
They were for Dortmund, but I think, but I wanted to give Schalke credit because of the way, I mean, when you saw someone like Christian Pulisic trying to dribble into the box, there are five Schalke players there. And like you said, there was a clear game for him from Domenico Tedesco. And I mean, at this point, he has achieved something at Schalke that hasn't been achieved in 4 years. I mean, he's the coach of the season, and what he's been able to do, not just in this game, but basically consistently through the second half of the season in different ways. When there are times when Schalke has needed to score, when they went down by four goals in the first road derby of the season, he had the players and he had the tactics to get his team back into the game. And it, even though there was the stretch of 1-0 victories, 2-0 victories, games that maybe shouldn't have deserved to win, they still won those games. And for a first season coach to do that, to come in as a 32-year-old, to come in and be able to do all of that, that is an incredible achievement. And to me, it all has climaxed in this Ruhr derby, where Schalke were clearly the better team in this game.
Yeah, 100% agree. Tedesco, he'd also be the manager of the season for me. As you said, he's combined so many different aspects of what makes a good coach there at Schalke. As we said, I don't think he's got the best team there on paper, the best squad on paper, but there's time for that to build. But he's clearly got them playing for each other, and he has every single game, he does have a clear tactical plan. And like you said, that culminated in the derby yesterday, where it was the contrast was so overwhelming. A Schalke team, which on paper isn't as good as that Dortmund team, especially going forward, and yet there was a clear plan, and it's exactly what Peter Stöger's Dortmund completely lacked. There was absolutely zero plan going forward. You mentioned a couple of dribbles that that Christian Pulisic made into the box, but if anything, that was playing exactly into what Tedesco wanted. He had a very narrow City and Schalke team, sitting there, narrow, compact, just waiting to absorb any sort of dribbles that might come in, whether it was from Philip or later Schürrle on the left, or whether it was Pulisic on the right. That's exactly what they were waiting for. And Tedesco deserves all credit for that. We've talked about his tactical prowess. I don't think that was ever in doubt. But he's also combined that with, he's shown that even at the age of 32, that he's also got the personality and the charisma and the leadership and the man management to take on a job the size of Schalke. And that can't be underestimated. This is a huge club.
Very different from Nagelsmann, definitely, taking over a club that doesn't have the pressures and the history behind
and
it that Schalke does.
Who knows? Let's give Nagelsmann the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe if, say, in 2019 he does end up taking over, say, Dortmund, maybe he will have that chance to prove himself that he can also do that.
But that's a big difference, like you're mentioning. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, but it's something that Tedesco has now absolutely proven, and thought it was fascinating. You know, at the end of the game, this is Domenico Tedesco who was criticised at first in some quarters as just being the famous laptop coach, a tactics nerd, and there he is on the Ultras podium at the front of the Nordkurve, bouncing around, singing derby winners. So he clearly gets that. I think there was a great shot of him before that as well, literally on his hands and knees, fist pumping on the ground. That's how much it meant to him, and he's really, really bought into that at Schalke, as has. As Christian Heidel, I think, as well, because he was also criticised at the start of the season by some of Schalke's more sort of hardcore fans for saying, "Oh, you're not focusing enough on our academy. You're selling out our roots as a club." I don't think any of them will be complaining about any of that sort of stuff after yesterday's performance. Really, really, really impressive, and something they can only build on.
Well, so we'd be remiss to not discuss Borussia Dortmund in this case. And I wanted to start this with Marcel Schmelzer. He talked about his big error in the game of turning the ball over to Daniel Caligiuri, although Caligiuri has done that many times this season long pass.
Yeah.
And the way that he waited, too, to pass the ball over.
It was almost reminiscent of the goal that he scored in the 1-0 win away at Mainz for Schalke, because he won the ball in a similar position. Obviously, this time he laid it off to Konoplyanka. And by the way, that's the point, where was Lukas Piszczek?
He was coming over. He was coming over to try to stop Cali Jury.
Far too late for me. The whole thing just fell apart. But yeah, Kelly's Robbie's been an absolute standout performer.
But I think, but Marcel Schmetzer also was the one who I think I don't remember who he tackled, but he tackled Burgstaller that set up the second goal for Naldo. Jonathan, who is not on the podcast this week, but he tweeted over the weekend that. If it wasn't for the fact that Marcel Schmelzer was Dortmund's captain, he wouldn't be in this team. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think there's a shout for that. But I think there's probably a case to be made for most players in Dortmund's back four, to be honest. If it wasn't for Socrates' reputation, for Toprak's reputation, there'd be a few of them who wouldn't necessarily be there. I'd include Piszczek in that as well. I don't think any of them are really performing. The lad Akanji has come in this year. I wouldn't put too much blame at his door. I think he's done all right as a young new player coming in. It's been nowhere near good enough across that back line, which is ironically enough the area where you'd expect a Peter Sturger team to actually be at its most solid. As much as it's not really acceptable, you could have predicted that maybe Sturger wouldn't get the most out of Dortmund in an attacking sense. Because we've never seen Peter Sturger get the most out of any club really in an attacking way. Cologne never had to. There was no expectation for him to do that. But when you're lining up there with, I mean, the front four at the weekend was Maximilian Philipp, Marco Reus, Michy Batshuayi, and Christian Pulisic. That's a ridiculous front four. Mm-hmm. And you brought on Götze and Schürrle in the second half. Götze arguably far too late. Out of those front six players there, what more do you want? But there was absolutely no clue whatsoever. I read before, doing a bit of research before this, Michy Batshuayi made 17 passes.
Yeah.
17. And only six of them were successful. And three of them were kickoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really, really poor.
Yeah, you mentioned the fact that, of course, Socrates and Toprak belong in that group with Marcel Schmelzer and Lukas Piszczek. And if you see one thing that Peter Sturger has done, since he's been at Dortmund, is he's tried to once again rely on the leaders of his dressing room rather than maybe necessarily coming up with the best plan to beat a team on any given day. Now, but at the same time, it's hard to criticize him too much because he's an interim manager who has lost twice, once to Bayern Munich and once to Schalke. But at the same time,
those defeats will come in. I also think that we shouldn't let him off that easily because I don't particularly like the way that he's increasingly in the last month, especially, almost given the impression that this isn't his fault at all, and it's not actually his job to sort out. There've been various comments in the past few weeks, which are along the lines of, I've come in, I've inherited this, and I'm off at the end of the year anyway. Like, he's not said it in that many words, but that's been reading between the lines. I don't really think that rubs. I mean, he said, in terms of his own future, he's not particularly bothered because, quote, I don't define my life by whether I'm on the touchline at Borussia Dortmund or not. I'm not sure if that quite rubs because for the time being, for the here and now, you are on the touchline at Borussia Dortmund and it is your job to try and get this relatively expensively constructed team. Call it a team. Can you really call it a team at Dortmund? This collection of individuals which they've put together to get more out of them. And he's not getting enough out of them. I think Kicker this morning is suggesting that his name is potentially still in the ring to take over permanently. I personally can't really see it, but I don't think we should be letting Peter Sturger off that lightly.
Yeah, I definitely can't believe that. But let's this obviously is not a usual thing to talk about because Schalke hadn't won. The last time that Schalke had won, Joel Matip was on their team, and
Eric Maxi, draws, though. There was an impressive 0-0 away.
Good results for Schalke considering where they were before Domenico Tedesco took over, definitely. But what do you see as the, if you were to look forward in just this rivalry, what do you see Schalke finally getting an upper hand over Borussia Dortmund, or do you think that Borussia Dortmund, with the resources that they still have at their disposal, I mean, keep in mind that they've transferred maybe 300 million worth of people to other clubs. So they still definitely have a treasure chest that they can pull from, which Schalke can't. But what do you see the future of this rivalry being?
I think if Dortmund put their minds to it, then I think it's got the future of the Dortmund Schalke rivalry in the long term is healthy, because I do eventually trust Dortmund to get it right, given the resources, given the experience, given the size of that club. I think they made the right moves in bringing back the likes of Sebastian Kehl and Matthias Sammer, and we'll see how that develops and what exact roles they have in years to come. So yeah, long term, I do trust them to get it right. And that could make for a great rivalry in the long term. In the short term, Schalke have definitely got the upper hand, and it's because there's a clear the coach has a clear plan on the pitch, which Dortmund lack, and there also seems to be a better functioning strategy off the pitch, which Dortmund also seem to lack. And if you're looking at it from a Borussia Dortmund point of view, then yeah, if anything can make a derby defeat any worse, is the fact that, look at the reasons for it, Schalke seem to be doing absolutely everything right at the moment. And in the short term, yeah, I think that'll be the case. Be interesting to see how Schalke and Tedesco deal with Champions League next year. That's going to be the next major milestone for them to deal with. Tedesco's never been there before. I'm not even sure Christian Heidel's been in that situation before, having to build a squad and manage that situation that can manage on both fronts. The expectations from the fans at Schalke will be, we have to be at least second again next season and out of the Champions League group stages and competing. That's because that's how they see themselves. It's a Champions League semi-finalist as recently as
2011
against Man United.
With Manuel Neuer still between the pipes for them.
So that's where they see themselves. Can they do it? Well, we'll have to wait and see. But given the progress that's been made in such a short amount of time with Tedesco and Heidel, I trust them to do it. But as I said at the start, I think they are going to have to invest in a slightly higher caliber of player.
So Leverkusen beat Frankfurt this weekend, and Bayern Munich beat Borussia Mönchengladbach. But that was not the things that people were talking about over the weekend, because on Friday, Bayern Munich announced that Niko Kovac, who has been coaching at Frankfurt for the last 2 years, was going to take over for Jupp Heynckes, and he has agreed to a 3-year contract, I guess that's until 2021, or a 3-year contract, basically. There was kind of a WWE-style war of words going on between Freddy Bobic, who is the Frankfurt sporting director, and Uli Hoeneß, and Hasan Salihamidzic, which also Lothar Matthäus had trouble saying, which I don't feel bad about. But basically, it's been just feces throwing on both sides about how this Kovac move to Bayern Munich occurred. Now, to go back to Thursday, that's when Bild and Sport Bild both reported that
Thursday night
that Kovac was going to take over as Bayern coach. Now, Bayern then admitted that they then decided to announce the fact that Kovac was taking over the club. And that did not make Freddy Bobic and Frankfurt very happy, because they have a tough schedule coming up. They had, of course, they're trying to make it to the Champions League. They're now still in the running for the Europa League, even with this loss to Leverkusen. But I mean, they have a very tough fixture list, including the German Cup coming up this week. And basically the words that Freddy Bobic used was selfish, aggravating, unprofessional, and lacking respect. And Uli Hoeneß on Sunday after the game unleashed his own barrage, saying that those comments were completely outrageous and that they had done everything professionally. They had just exploited a clause in Niko Kovac's contract, and they wanted to announce the move so that Frankfurt had enough time, 4 extra weeks, they said, to appoint a replacement for Niko Kovac.
Once again, Bayern Munich doing everyone a favor.
Exactly. Now, Hasan Salihamidžić before the game to Sky was just completely, he was completely caught off guard with the way that the questions were asked. And I definitely give Sky credit for really digging into both Salihamidžić and to Hoeneß on this topic. But basically, Salihamidžić wouldn't admit to the fact when the contact with Niko Kovac took place. And Uli Hoeneß came out and said after the game that there had been a birthday party for his 60-year-old Croatian driver that both Kovac brothers, both Niko and Robert, were both invited to. And that there was just celebrating a birthday party. Now, this sounds like something out of The Godfather. I mean, you can believe what you want, but basically, Frankfurt is in conclusion, Frankfurt is upset with the way that Niko Kovac's move to Bayern Munich was announced. Matt, do you have sympathy for them for that?
Certainly have sympathy with Eintracht Frankfurt. The way that Bayern Munich have gone about this shouldn't come as any surprise to anyone. They've been dealing in this way with coaches, with players, with other members of staff for decades now, so that should come as no surprise. Doesn't make it any more acceptable, because I do think it's ultimately tapping up.
The one thing that Uli Hoeneß did not mention in his entire post game tirade to Sky Sports was, I mean, he could have called Frankfurt before saying, "We want to announce this now so that way you guys can find a replacement." It doesn't seem like that conversation ever happened.
No, I don't think it did. I don't even think the timing or informing people of any sort of official announcement, I don't even think that's particularly relevant. It's just the way it's all been done behind closed doors, and quite blatantly tapping up an employee of another football club and of a rival football club.
Well, I don't necessarily have a problem with that, because Niko Kovac did have a clause in his contract. He had a buyout clause in his contract that was, I believe, 2.8 million euros, if I remember.
2.2 million. Unless Frankfurt qualify for Champions League, in which point it'll be 2.7 million. But even so, I mean, the way they've gone about it by going directly to Kovac and not via Eintracht Frankfurt, that's the first problem. I find that unpalatable. Because by all accounts, Kovac and Bayern had been in touch with each other for a good 2 weeks before Freddy Bobic was actually informed of that, during which time Kovac had actually sat at a couple of press conferences and quite outright lied and said, no, there has been no contact. Well, it's come out now that, well, there was. So I don't think, unfortunately, I don't think Niko Kovac himself comes out of this particularly well either, which is a huge shame, given the hugely positive work, both in terms of Frankfurt's football development and their development as a club generally, over the past couple of seasons since he arrived. I don't think he's particularly helped himself there. I don't think anyone comes out of it looking particularly good, but should we be surprised at the way Bayern have gone about this? No, absolutely not. Kovac, yeah, I am a little bit surprised, and I think he probably has sullied his reputation at Eintracht Frankfurt slightly. I think the whole thing has just left a little bit of a sour taste, really.
Do you think Frankfurt, of course, lost in a big way to Leverkusen, 4-1 is not a small result. Do you think it will affect the way that Frankfurt is going to play the rest of the season?
Yeah, definitely. I think the timing's awful. As Bobic pointed out, they've got huge games coming up. They had, obviously, this was talking before the Leverkusen.
They still play Bayern Munich too in Munich.
And they've got to play them in the Leverkusen Bayern in the cup as well, isn't it?
They have to play. Frankfurt, they play Schalke
Schalke coming up on Wednesday. No, Bobic is right. They've got huge weeks coming up. The development and the growth at that club and the progress made has been fantastic over the past few years, and here they are suddenly on the brink of Champions League football, which wouldn't have been impossible, certainly not before that trip to Leverkusen. And in a on the brink of a second consecutive German Cup final, which I would, who knows what they might have been able to achieve there. And then suddenly, as in Bobic's words, that there comes a third party, in this case Bayern, and basically starts tapping up arguably your most important employee. Bayern might turn around and say, right, well, legally they might have done nothing wrong because this buyout clause in Kovac's contract exists. But to do it the way they have behind Eintracht Frankfurt's back, I just think is really, really unpalatable. And then, to answer the question, I think, it will have an effect. And maybe it didn't have an I wouldn't lay the blame entirely on that as to why they got beat 4-1 at the weekend. I thought, we'll come on to it, like when we discuss the Cup, we'll talk about Leverkusen. But I thought Leverkusen were really, really, really good, as they have been for a few weeks now. So I wouldn't put the blame necessarily on that. But, I think now that they're 4 or 5 points off the Champions League places now, I think Eintracht Frankfurt, they don't have enough to get into that. Kovac and his team can present themselves as professionally as they want and say that they're still focused, but the dynamic has changed completely now. I don't think Eintracht Frankfurt supporters would have begrudged Niko Kovac moving to Bayern had it been done the right way. But I think the way it's been done
was not the right way.
The problem I saw, I was sent a picture of a T-shirt doing the rounds in the Frankfurt away end at Leverkusen, which basically said Kovac from Frankfurt hero to Munich's whore. Which perhaps slightly strong words, but that's the view of the Eintracht Frankfurt fans.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Frankfurt's. I'm looking at Frankfurt's run in right now. They obviously play Schalke in the Cup. They play Hertha Berlin at home next week. That should be a game that they should win. But I mean, if this something like this is hanging over their head, Hertha is a type of team that could trip up some other an opponent on away from home. Then they also have to play Schalke as well, so they still have to play the top two teams in the Bundesliga the rest of the way. So
both away from home as well,
right? So
they've now lost 5 away games on the bounce, Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe this regression was coming because in 2018, it's not like they have completely dazzled their opponents. I mean, they also had a rough loss against Augsburg
earlier. Been very steady and. Steady, noticeable, and very laudable progress made. They've progressed from Kovac initially turning them into an extremely solid team who had, I think, the second or third best defence in the league last season, and this season it's up until he's shipping 4 goals at the weekend. It was the second or third best defence in the league this year. But they've also added more. So we knew they were stable and solid, but they've also added more quality going forward. We've spoken before about the effect that Sebastian Haller has had, the progress that Marius Wolf has made. Ante Rebic has been on form this season. There have been a lot of positives. Kevin Prince-Boateng has scored goals as well when he's come in. Kovac has done some genuinely really, really great and great progressive and laudable work at Eintracht Frankfurt. And it's just the way this has just been dealt with over the past couple of days. Like I said, I don't think anyone would really begrudge Kovac going to Bayern and then making use of his buyout clause. That's what it's there for. That's absolutely fair enough. And the chance of managed Bayern Munich only comes around once in a lifetime, so why wouldn't he take it? That there's no problem with that. It's just the way it's been done means I can totally understand why Freddy Bobic was so angry. And fair play to him for coming out and addressing it as directly as he did.
How do you think that... Niko Kovac would do at Bayern Munich?
We can probably have a bigger discussion on this maybe over the summer, looking ahead to it, as to what we
but
actually
what is
expect.
Your feeling right now?
My feeling right now, a bit underwhelmed, and as much as despite leaving aside the way he's gone about it, I think fair play to Kovac taking his chance, deserves it, done great work at Frankfurt, but he's clearly third or fourth choice, isn't he, from Bayern? They wanted, Hoeneß wanted Heynckes, that wasn't happening. They wanted Tuchel, that wasn't happening. They wanted Hasenhüttl, that wasn't happening.
Well, we don't actually know if they wanted Hasenhüttl.
By all accounts, they did. It was at least inquired about.
I mean, it was reported that he did, but I mean, I don't think that Hasenhüttl had any intention of leaving. And I mean, I wouldn't necessarily, I mean, but nonetheless, it doesn't matter because he still was not the top option that Bayern Munich had coming, at least coming into the season, or at least when they fired Carlo Ancelotti.
If just looking at it, and obviously we only had a few days to really mull over it, but in terms of what speaks for Niko Kovac, I'd say that obviously the fact that he's a, he's Croatian, he's born in Berlin, growing up in Germany. He's the Croatians consider him more German than Croatian. So that was important to Hoeneß. He's a former Bayern player. That was important to them. He does know the club inside out. That was important to them. He's shown that he's a great man manager. He's been working with 16, 17, I think 18 now, different nationalities in that Eintracht Frankfurt squad.
And Kevin Prince-Boateng. Who knows what nationality he is? Probably from the moon.
Nationalities on his own. And so he's shown that he's a great man manager, that he can do that, that he gets well with his players. Yeah, the only issue being now is this is complete lack of experience. He's had 2.5 years of club management at a team where the expectations are nowhere near as comparable. He's got absolutely zero experience in international club competitions, although albeit he did take Croatia to the World Cup. So you do wonder if he's really in a position to do this. I mean, I think in order to balance that out, they've said that Peter Hermann, who is Jupp Heynckes' long-term assistant, will be staying behind to assist. The structures are in place at Bayern, so that might help him, but there is a part of me that thinks this... slight parallels with David Moyes and Manchester United. I honestly don't know. I'm not entirely convinced now, but if it's not, hey, great chance for Schalke and Leverkusen and the rest of them to maybe catch up.
Speaking of Schalke and Leverkusen and Frankfurt, of course, they are playing the German Cup.
And Bayern. They're in the semi-finals for the first time in years.
So this is our Shot from Rosette this week. Thank you guys for voting in our poll. And we're going to have these polls for the rest of the last four match days of the season as well. And so we are going to preview the German Cup semifinal. We'll probably go in depth about them because we won't have an opportunity to analyze them. So let's start with the first game, which is Leverkusen against Bayern Munich. This is actually a fixture that maybe not is as straightforward as one maybe a couple weeks ago. I mean, Leverkusen had some embarrassing performances in the league, but in the last 2 weeks has beaten RB Leipzig and has away from home too, and has beaten Eintracht Frankfurt at home, and now they've basically faced their biggest challenge maybe for the rest of the season, which is to play by the champions, Bundesliga champions elect Bayern Munich. What is your feeling on this fixture or on this semifinal?
Really, really looking forward to both of them. It's going to be a busy week.
What do you think of this one?
This one, Bayern, Bayern Leverkusen. Yeah, obviously you're always going to look at Bayern Munich as a favourite. I don't think there's any getting away from that, but Leverkusen couldn't be coming into this in any better shape, could they really? Having put four goals past direct Champions League competitors in Red Bull and Frankfurt in the past couple of weeks. Really impressive performances. Kevin Folland's bang on form. Kai Havertz has been impressive. Julian Brandt has been heavily involved. They've been extremely impressive. I thought some of the goals they scored in the past two games, the past two 4-1 wins have been precisely the sort of attacking football which Heiko Herrlich has tried to bring in there. Very, very similar to the way Tedesco has Schalke playing, actually. That's quite a good parallels. I've not had the chance to do it, but if you watch both goals side by side, I think Caligiuri winning the ball and setting up Konoplyanka looked very, very similar to the way in which Mavi's fourth goal actually for Frankfurt that was, but the setups for Bellarabi into Folland for two of the Bayer Leverkusen goals.
That is the most encouraging sign to me, that you have a player like Karim Bellarabi who has clearly lost his place in the side, but is still I would say he looks better on over the weekend than he did in many points last season. And the fact that he's now one of their bench players, considering the way that Brandt and Leon Bailey and Kevin Folland and even Kai Havertz is playing, it's amazing what Heiko Herrlich has done with the depth that he has in his squad. But it will be a tough week for them because they play Bayern Munich, of course, in the Cup. They have Borussia Dortmund next weekend, but they definitely have their fate in their own hands,
yeah.
Which is a really, really good position to be in. Not a position that you thought they would be in a couple weeks ago. But the fact that they, like you said, they have defeated direct rivals to a Champions League spot is really encouraging. And you look at the game that started the second half of the season in January. That game, I think, was thrown away in the second half. I don't think that Leverkusen looked really overwhelmed against Bayern in that game. And in the cup competition, Werder Bremen a couple of years ago played Bayern Munich to the wire in the Champions League in the DFB Pokal semifinals. So I would not be surprised if there was an upset, especially since the game is happening in Bayern Arena.
No, definitely, the Heiko Herrlich has seemed to turn them into a bit of a team for the big occasions, and it's been the smaller teams that they've stepped up against. The derby defeat to Cologne immediately springs to mind, where Leverkusen were absolutely awful, and anyone that gets beat by this Cologne side at the moment has to ask questions of themselves. But when it comes to the big games, Leverkusen have really, really pulled it out and have been very impressive. And that's, it says a lot about the mentality in the team and the belief that they can go into these games with teams which are supposedly predicted and believed to be better than them, to be superior than them, and yet go head-to-head with them and attack them. And they've got so much firepower going forward and so much pace. We've not even mentioned Leon Bailey this weekend, who had a relatively quiet weekend by his standards, but he's been arguably the outstanding player of the entire Bundesliga season. So fair play to them. I don't think they'll see it as a problem that they've had to face Red Bull, Frankfurt, Bayern in the Cup, and then Dortmund away in the league in such a short space of time. I think the way they seem to be playing and the belief seems to be going through that team, they'll probably relish that. This is exactly what they'll be wanting. They'll be chomping at the bit to get at them. I think although Leon Bailey was relatively quiet this weekend, I think definitely need to focus a word of praise on Kai Havertz's performance. He was good against Red Bull last week, and he was involved in a few of the goals this week as well. Kevin Folland was quite explicit in his praise for him after the game. Mm-hmm. He said, this absolutely outstanding talent, and he could hardly believe what he's playing with.
But Folland with a hat trick himself too. His first hat trick of his career.
Yeah.
Let's look a little bit at Bayern Munich, because I think many expected them to take their foot off the gas since the Bundesliga was in the bag like they had in previous seasons. But with many reserve players in the team, they absolutely dismantled a Gladbach team that was showing a few signs of life.
They did.
Recently.
I mean, I'm not sure if you'd call them, if that's a sign of life in Gladbach, then they're getting pretty desperate over there, I think.
Well, they are pretty desperate, but they were showing, there were some signs of life more recently than there have been in much of the second half of the season, but it didn't matter because Bayern Munich just completely steamrolled them.
Well, actually, I think it says more about Gladbach than it does about Bayern, albeit they did make a load of changes. I think what's more telling about this Bayern Munich team post winning the title is the performance against Sevilla in the week, which was a full strength team, and yet wasn't particularly convincing. I think it seems pretty clear the way Heinrich is going to play this is that he is going to rest players in the league so that he's got a full strength 11 available for the semi-final against Real. You can argue whether that's the best way to go about it or not. I don't know. We've discussed before saying that Guardiola approached it by playing his pretty much his main 11 week in, week
out.
Yeah,
but you know what?
Arguably shattering the
map. Well, I have to interrupt because that is true, but Heinrich, when he won the title in 2013... basically played mostly reserve players in the rest of the Bundesliga the season.
No,
but
there's something to be said for both ways.
But the difference is that Bayern Munich went unbeaten the rest of the season, and Pep Guardiola's team did not. So I think even though he's playing these reserve players, I would be very cautious to say that they would play like a B team, because I think that one of his best qualities is the way that he rotates and in the way that what he demands out of his players who are rotated in. He expects them to step up and fill the spot of the person that they're rotating in for. And that is why I think that is what I saw over the weekend, was the fact that even though Lewandowski didn't come on until the 70th minute, it didn't matter because Sandro Wagner had that game under control. And that's why I'm very interested to see what Lewandowski does now in the German Cup, knowing that he's basically going to be rested. He doesn't have to play. He was complaining in the first half of the season that he was playing nonstop, not just for Bayern Munich but for Poland as well. But now he can go out there, give every ounce of effort that he possibly can, knowing that Sandro Wagner can come in and replace him.
Yeah, well, that makes this semi-final all the more important. In fact, it's probably a godsend for Bayern Munich that they've actually got a competitive game to use almost as preparation for the semi-final in the Champions League coming up. Because you can talk about rotation as much as you like, I suppose, but at the end of the day, the remaining Bundesliga games are now unimportant, and they are ultimately meaningless. What isn't meaningless is a semi-final against a completely resurgent Bayer Leverkusen team, where, like I said, it won't just be Lewandowski, who will have a point to prove in a properly competitive match to prove that he's still number one there ahead of Sandro Wagner. If that's really in doubt.
I don't know if that's really in doubt. But I think
I think it's important for Bayern as a collective anyway to have not just an important, meaningful semi-final, but a semi-final which I hope and I expect, but certainly I hope that it will be genuinely competitive, because like I said, Bayer Leverkusen are coming into this and they could not be in better form and they could not be in better shape ahead of this. So, yeah, hopefully from the point of view of a neutral, we'll see a genuine game where Leverkusen, especially at home, can actually stand up to Bayern. And they weren't completely overran in the league game at the Bayer Arena earlier this season, but the difference in quality did show. But you'd hope this time that, they can stand up to them and at the very least deliver a competitive game. Also, from Bayern's point of view, like I said, looking at the Champions League, be good preparation for them. And I think, you don't want to be too... Too biased, but it would be great to see a DFB Pokal final not involving Dortmund or Bayern.
So, what also should be a competitive game is Schalke's game against Frankfurt. Now, we've gone through the both teams' options throughout the podcast, but what I wanted to ask is who do you think will have the advantage in midfield? Because both of those teams play with three men at the back. They both have unconventional choices to go up front. I mean, Kevin Prince-Boateng played up top for Frankfurt against Leverkusen because there was injuries to the main strikers for Bayer Leverkusen. For Frankfurt. But it's I think that the midfield would be a very important battle for both of these teams. Who do you think has the edge? Because you have Schalke on the one hand with younger, more athletic players that are playing in Tedesco's system, but you have more experienced players that are playing in a very aggressive Niko Kovac system, and both will probably be trying to disrupt the other.
To me, Schalke clearly have the upper hand going into it, not just tactically, but also from a mental and psychological point of view, given what's happened in the respective games at the weekend and the respective situations of the coaching staff and the clubs as a whole. From a tactical point of view, I think it'll suit Schalke, to be honest, playing at home. I think they'll approach it similar in the way to Dortmund, to the Dortmund game, and I think they'll probably try and allow Frankfurt to have as much of the ball as possible and then use that energy and youth and that high pressing to catch Frankfurt on the break. And as stable as Frankfurt have been, I think Leverkusen showed that if you can win the ball in dangerous positions in midfield against Eintracht Frankfurt and you've got the players up front to transition quickly, then you can certainly cause them huge problems. Leverkusen did it. Dortmund certainly couldn't do it, but I certainly see Schalke in a position as to do to Frankfurt. Unfortunately, given the good season Frankfurt have had, but unfortunately to do to Frankfurt what Leverkusen have done to them in the league, would this all have been slightly different had there been stability surrounding Niko Kovac at Frankfurt? Had this semi-final taken place last Wednesday, for example, before all this came out? Arguably, who knows? I think you can suggest it, but I think so many things now are playing into Schalke's hands and directly out of Frankfurt's hands, that unfortunately what's arguably gone from the more interesting and more intriguing of the semi-finals beforehand, I think now is actually unfortunately, maybe I'll be proved wrong. I hope I am. Hope it'll be a good game.
What are your score predictions for these games?
I'm going to tip Schalke, especially at home, to beat Frankfurt.
By?
3-1.
3-1, okay.
3-1 to Schalke. And I'm going to go for it. Leverkusen, 2-1.
Yeah, I think 2-1 is a good...
I'm going to go for it.
Interesting. I don't know. If Leverkusen were to win, I don't know if there's going to be that many goals. I think it would be... Something inspiring.
Well, I think there would be. This Leverkusen team, like they've just put four past Frankfurt, four past Red Bull.
I know, but they haven't been playing Bayern Munich. I think if they do win, and I think that they might, it would be probably a 1-0 victory. But I do. I still would tip Bayern Munich to win 2-1.
We're going for a Bayer Leverkusen Schalke final.
Oh, I think that would be what both of us want. I'm looking at your face right now. I think that's what you want, definitely. I don't know. I think I am caught up in the romanticism of Joep Heynckes still, and I think that if he were to retire one more time, then it would be you should go out on a treble. So
again,
why not?
He's done that once before.
Well, it would solidify a very very awesome legacy for him. I think you're right. I think the way that Schalke played in the Ruhr Derby was very telling to with the team that they are now. Which is, I would maybe not go with that score. I think it would be a 2-0 for Schalke in that game. That'll do it for this week's Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts. And if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. Matt Ford is at Matt_4D. And I'm at Davis_VanOptor. Before we go, here is our stat of the week. At 18 years and 307 days old, Kai Havertz became the youngest player ever to make 50 Bundesliga appearances. Thanks for listening, and we hope to hear from you next week.